My name is Owen Strand. I teach here at this school, over here at Boyce College, across the way, the undergraduate school of Southern Seminary. I teach theology and history there. And so it's really fun to have you guys here today. It's a blessing. And I'm actually not going to be joined by Flame. Do you know that already? Okay. I was going to say you are probably sorely disappointed right now if you thought it was me and Flame and it's just me. You probably don't know about me, but you probably do know about Flame, and that's fine. I understand. That's how it would be for me, too. But Flame can't be here. I think he's got a concert. He was here last night, so you got to hear the music, the very good rap of Flame. But I am here, so the show will go on, and we will talk about the gospel hip-hop revolution, okay? That's the title they gave me, so that's what I'm working with here. Where are you guys from? I just quickly want to know where you're from, okay?
Lexington.
Lexington. Are you, and say the school you're from, too. Sorry. Okay. Western. Okay.
Iowa.
Okay.
I'm actually from Meade County, but I go to U of
O. Okay.
Cincinnati, and I go to Kentucky State. What are we doing?
Where? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. From Massachusetts. I graduated from Eastern Nazarene College.
Huh.
Totally liberal. I go there. And now I go to Southern.
You go where?
I go here.
Oh, okay. I'm from Maine, and I know people from ENC.
From Detroit, I go to University of Michigan.
Okay.
From Indianapolis, I go to a school called IUPUI.
Yeah.
University of Purdue, University of Indianapolis.
I don't understand that. Really?
Yeah, same degree.
That's fascinating. I didn't know that. You know, that was the central idea. A Purdue education is not cheap.
No, but like...
Yeah, but at this school it is. Yeah, okay. Oh, you go to Southern. Okay. Excellent. All right. Well, again, my name's Owen Strand. I'm from Maine, and you don't meet many Mainers in general, but it's really good to have you guys here. And let's just begin with prayer, and then we'll jump into the material, okay? Heavenly Father, thank you for bringing these students here. Thank you for this conference and for the celebration of the gospel that's unfolding. Father, I pray that you would bless our session, that it would be edifying and meaningful for these students, and I just pray that you would be... empowering their spiritual lives in all kinds of ways through this conference, but especially through involvement in their local churches, wherever they are, Father. I pray that they would be plugging in and serving and being richly blessed by the Word of God, your Word, as it goes forth. So we pray now for our time in Jesus' name. Amen. All right. Well, what I want to do in this session is basically this. I think this is an hour-long session. Is that right? Okay. So what we're going to do... Hey, Allison and Russell. They were at my table over lunch. Very exciting. So what I'm going to do is talk for about 40 minutes about rap and gospel rap, and then throw it out to you, okay? That's the general plan. And what I want to do first is talk about the history of rap, actually. And then we'll bleed into the history of Christian rap, and then I'll conclude with some kind of theological thoughts at the end, okay? So that's what we're going to do, where we're going, all in the span of 56 minutes. So, reformed rap emerges from the broader hip-hop movement. The broader hip-hop movement sparks off in the 1970s by the work of a figure who is known as Kool Herc, K-O-O-L-H-E-R-C. Of course, I'm a professor over here. I teach 3 classes a semester. I'm used to spelling everything out because the material is testable. There's not going to be a test here. Don't worry about it. But if you want the actual spelling, I'll give it to you. Kool Herc, of course, is working with records. He's playing records. He's a DJ in the older style of that term. And he eventually starts scratching the record, right? You're familiar with this. You know scratching by this time, obviously. But think about that from fresh a fresh perspective. Nobody's ever scratched a record, at least intentionally. You know, if you who here had a record in your home growing up of some kind? Did you have a record player? Did you? Okay. Have you ever, or if raise your hand if you've ever had one or come into contact with a record player. Okay, basically all of us. Then you know that, you know, you're putting the record on the little table thing, and, you know, it can go kind of wrong depending on where you put the needle. It can scratch, it can sound really loud, that sort of thing. Well, Cool Herc starts playing around with ways to scratch that record and make sounds. And he essentially creates something of a new style of music. In other words, he's creating a more complex form because you have a song, but then you're adding these scratches, this rhythm to the song that isn't there naturally. Now, I don't know about your specific background with records. Basically, all of you just indicated you're familiar with them. But my parents, I was born in 1981. My parents had a record player, and they had Michael Jackson's Thriller. They only had like 10 records. I don't know why they had Thriller. Because if you knew my parents, that would be a strange thing. But they had Thriller. They're great parents, but they weren't that cool. So I would put on Thriller as like a 7-year-old or an 8-year-old on the record player and listen to Thriller. And you can remember back, and you know, this is Michael Jackson. That's the great record right there of the Jackson corpus. And I can remember you know, the needle skipping and this sort of thing. Well, Curtis Blow, Sugar Hill Gang, Melly Mel all become MCs and rappers following Cool Herc's original discovery in the 1970s. In the late 70s, early 80s, they start not just dancing to the beat, which people were doing as these DJs began scratching, but they began rhyming words to the beat, kicking out these original, sometimes spontaneous raps to the song. And this new, totally new, musical art form becomes very popular. Run DMC and Public Enemy in the 1980s are two of the first groups who really take the art form and run with it and cut major records. And some of you are familiar with some of this history, but I want to walk through it just briefly at least to set the stage. Public Enemy, for example, releases the album It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back in 1988, and that is a major moment in the history of rap. Now, Public Enemy did not necessarily set out to engage everybody and draw them into a circle of welcoming, because Public Enemy themselves, if you know anything about this album and their early music, were angry. They were angry about conditions in the inner cities. They believed that they were shut out from economic opportunities. They believed that white America was privileged and black America was underprivileged, and they were decrying these realities. And many of us would look back and say that they were speaking true things in many cases. Their solutions were often not formed in the shape of policy or something like that, but they were articulating an experience that really did not have a prominent cultural location prior to this. How would exactly a 21-year-old black guy from L.A. or New York City have articulated his feelings of helplessness prior to Public Enemy, prior to rap? He could have channeled that in different ways, of course, but in terms of catching the ear of the broader culture, how would he have done that? There are very few ways he could have, very few ways. Rap explodes that. It opens up a whole new means of expression. It brings a whole other group of Americans to the table in terms of an artistic conversation. So this is a major cultural development in the 1980s. Now, gangster rap in the 90s continues the mainstreaming of rap in America, which is very odd, isn't it? Because if you know about gangster rap, G-A-N-G-S-T-A, not gangster rap, you sound very weird if you say that or spell it that way. It's gangster rap. Gangster rap, of course, ironically, is not public-friendly, right? It's not kid-friendly music. But ironically, it's gangster rap that helps make rap part of the mainstream in America. Figures like Ice-T, who recorded that early song Cop Killer, N.W.A., was straight out of Compton, Eazy-E, Ice Cube, all of these albums and many more constitute some of the best-selling albums of early gangster rap. And they introduced this new brand of explosive, angry West Coast hip-hop to the masses. Of course, Public Enemy and many of the other early rap groups, successful ones, were from the East Coast. Now, we're getting a strong West Coast presence in rap in the early 90s. Therefore, you see some cracks, some fissures emerging in the rap world, in the music world. The East and West Coast, of course, are different in many terms, not just in rap music, but there are going to be some major tensions, as you probably know, between these two regions of the country. And in fact, these albums were selling in such numbers that Black America is no longer the sole or even predominant buying audience of rap music. Though these figures that I have just mentioned and many others are articulating, again, their understanding of their experience, rap is spreading to the suburbs. White teenagers who have never survived a shooting, who are not placed in harm's way on a daily basis, who are not fighting for their life and this sort of thing, are nonetheless buying these albums and identifying with them. They're identifying with the anger in these albums. They're identifying with the powerful means of expression from rap. They're identifying with this general posture. Did you have something you wanted to ask? That's a good question. I think definitely one of the factors is that they're each performing a certain type of sound. There's a different sound that emerges on the two coasts, and they sell different amounts of albums, and I think there's honestly rivalry between the two forms of rap. One is very popular, the other is very popular, and there's a rivalry that develops. Of course, they're just separated geographically, right? So the West Coast rappers know each other. Not that the West Coast rappers were all buddies, but they know each other in general, and the East Coast rappers know each other in general. And that just creates a group identity that makes it difficult in the 90s in a way we're going to talk about for the two camps to get together. Yes? That's a good question, too. I think perhaps because rap is a strong form of expression. It's all of your identity right out there. It's put out there. So much of rap then and now is territorial, right? I mean, so many rap groups have taken their group name from their area code, for example. So you have this in the East Coast, you have this in the West Coast, you have this in the South, right? Where you are from is your identity. Ironically, though much of Black America, for example, is underprivileged, you know, doesn't have access to the same cultural resources that much of suburban America, for example, does. Many Black Americans find their identity. They turn the tables on that, right? And they find a stronger sense of community in their underprivileged setting. And I think that's part of it, too. I'm sure there's much more we could say, but that's at least a beginning sketch for some of these realities. But there's always been this way in which, as a rapper, you really are putting all of your identity out there. In your rap, you are on display. I remember in the acclaimed TV series The Wire, the figure of Marlo, the drug dealer towards the end of the series, he's got some guys who are trying to supplant him, and he's shot at in the streets, and he yells out, my name is my name. My name is my name. In other words, his name, Marlo, is his full claim on his area. And I think there's something there to think about. The 90s are often considered the golden age of hip-hop. I don't know if you know that, but that's what they are. Nas, the New York City rapper, puts out Illmatic in 1994. Maybe the greatest rap album ever. Of course, I'm from the East Coast. I'm from Maine, so I'm biased. But honestly, Illmatic, amazing album. It wins 5 mics from the source. Now, the source later gets co-opted. It's the original rap Bible, you know, the rap magazine that tells you what you need to know in rap, and it reviews all the new albums. And it has the rating system of 1 to 5 mics, 1 being very bad, 5 being absolute classic for all time. And back in this day, in the mid-90s, early 90s, almost nobody got 5 mics. Well, Nas gets 5 mics, and that immediately establishes him as one of the top rappers in the world. Jay-Z, who is still putting out platinum albums, which is incredible, basically 20 years later, puts out Reasonable Doubt, and that of course, is very successful. The Notorious B.I.G., Biggie Smalls, releases Ready to Die in this same period. You can see the strength of rap in this period. And Tupac Shakur releases Me Against the World. Wu-Tang Clan puts out Enter the Wu-Tang, 36 Chambers, and then Wu-Tang Forever, with one of the best opening verses in any rap song ever made. Those iconic lines, Obama atomically, Socrates philosophies, that, and it goes on. War of the masses, the outcome disastrous, many of the victims' families say the ashes. Oh, there are so many good lines in that song, Triumph, from Wu-Tang Forever. So all of these albums, go platinum. They change the culture. I mean, this is incredible. In the span of a few years, all these rappers break out and go platinum and draw huge followings. And again, part of this is that urban-suburban connection that we just mentioned. Though, I don't think necessarily any of these rappers set out to do this initially when they started rapping. I don't think Tupac thought suburban kids from La Jolla were going to be bumping his raps in the Jeep Wrangler. That's what happens. In general, rap goes mainstream. It at least begins to go mainstream in the mid-90s. There are major obstacles, though, that pop up. Biggie and Tupac are each killed in 1996 and 1997. And that is incredibly significant for the history of rap in this country. Again, rap is a violent art form by nature. It doesn't have to be, but it is by its origin. And nowhere is that clearer than in the murder of its 2 greatest stars in this period. I mean, think about that for a minute. You know that fact. You've grown up in a world in which this is reality. Think about if John Lennon and Bruce Springsteen, you know, many years ago had just died when they're in their young 30s, you know, in the very promising stage of their career. They're just established. They're selling millions and millions of records, and they're snuffed out all of a sudden together. That's what happens, essentially, when Biggie and Tupac are killed. But there are many others who continue to contribute to hip-hop. Very significantly, Eminem crashes the scene in this period at the late 90s. He puts out the Slim Shady EP and the Marshall Mathers EP. The Marshall Mathers EP, produced by a short, white, bleach blonde guy who couldn't get a tan if he had keys of his own to a tanning salon and stayed there for 24 hours straight, sells 10 million records. Nowadays, a record label throws you a cruise and a major party if you sell 500,000 copies of an album. I mean, album sales have just plummeted, right, in the digital age. In this period, Eminem sells 10 million albums. He is the best-selling rapper of this period. And that, of course, is another major part of the story of rap in America, this broader sketch that we are creating. Eminem, of course, brings white rappers to the table. So now it's not just white people who are buying the music. Now it's a white rapper who is the biggest rapper. This is really strange if you look back at the origins of the movement. There are no white people early on who are the predominant pioneers, who are the leaders. But this is changing. There's kind of a similar thing happening in golf. Golf is a white man's game. Blacks were excluded from golf, at least for certain years. And all of a sudden, Tiger Woods is the greatest golfer in the world. So this is an age in which these cultural and racial stereotypes are being turned on their head. All the while, there's a significant underground rap movement. The Roots, Q-Tip, Dead Prez, Mos Def, Talib Kweli, Black Star, and others contribute. So you have commercial rap, and you have underground rap. Underground rap is the more intellectual kind, often focused on more complex subject matter and lyrical formation. And then mainstream rap often focuses more on catchy hooks, choruses, and easy to follow, at least easier to follow, raps. So this underground movement, which, by the way, has representation in the Lyricist Lounge series. There are three CDs put out under the Lyricist Lounge heading, and you can find those out there, and those are very interesting if you want to study not just, or get accustomed to, not just mainstream rap, but underground rap. The underground rap movement is a very stimulating movement for many. Christian rap, for our purposes, now we pick up this thread, emerges in the 1990s, actually the late 80s. Who pioneers Christian rap? Who knows? Kirk Franklin, definitely one of the pioneers. Who else? You guys have to know. You know this. Late 80s, early 90s. Yeah, DC Talk. That's exactly right. DC Talk releases DC Talk, very creative title, in 1989. And New Thang, actual pronunciation, N-U-T-H-A-N-G, in 1990. And these are both rap-oriented. I can remember my little sister had DC Talk, one of these albums, the song Time Is Ticking Away. Anyone know this? Some of you were younger, a little younger. Okay. Time is ticking away. Tick, tick, ticking away. Yeah, anyway. I wasn't a huge DC Talk fan, but DC Talk is the first group. And by the way, they are early on, just in terms of rap in general. They get into the game early, in the late 80s and 90s. And they are the first to really attempt to do this new form of music in the Christian scene. The Gospel Gangsters, T-Bone, and Grits all rank as at least several of the most significant groups and artists of the early 90s. Toby Mac, based off of his success at DC Talk, founds a new record label, Gotee Records, G-O-T-E-E. And that houses many of the early Christian rap groups, including Grits. Who here has heard of Grits? Grits has been featured in different TV shows and films, and their music has gone out widely. The Cross Movement is a very significant development in terms of Christian rap. They release House of Representatives in the late 90s, and they're working off of the Wu-Tang supergroup motif. So Wu-Tang is the original supergroup. They would have not just one or two or three people on stage, but like nine, depending on who was sober and who was high on stage. Cross Movement does not get high or drunk, but they do have the supergroup, and they are very skilled. They are very lyrically focused. They put out hard boom-bap East Coast rap, and they get a major following. They amass a major following in the 90s and early 2000s. In this same period, though, there's a division in Christian rap. There's at least a couple divisions. There's one division between the mainstream and the underground. So you have figures like Mars Ill, M-A-R-S-I-L-L, playoff of Mars Hill, of course, from Acts 17. Mars Ill, which is one of my favorite groups, amazing group lyrically. Mars Ill represents the underground. And then figures like KJ52, maybe you've heard of KJ52, he's more mainstream. And both groups would say that they're Christian. You know, both are after similar goals, but they do that in different ways. There's a kind of disjunction that pops up between those who think that you're supposed to preach the gospel explicitly in rap and those who think that you just kind of rap about life. You rap about what you want to rap about as a Christian. And so Cross Movement is kind of in that camp of preaching the gospel explicitly. Groups like Mars Ill or Tunnel Rats, Syntax Records are on the other side, and they're still preaching the gospel, I would say, but doing also some more topical focus, I guess you would say. Both sides, though, are successful, and both sides win a hearing. Many of us today, of course, know about Lecrae and Flame and these kind of guys. Flame was going to be here, right? That would have been cool. But he would have given you his own experience in this. But we don't necessarily know about the other side. But these are the figures who lay the foundation for this explosion of reformed rap or gospel hip-hop, whatever you want to call it, holy hip-hop, in our day. There's a significant foundation that has to be laid before the success of the modern day gospel rap movement can be enjoyed. Artists like Braille and Omega Watts from Oregon achieve fairly significant fame, and they bridge the gap between these two groups. If you have heard Braille's Shades of Gray, you'll know that that's a very strong album. Braille was actually named one of the top upcoming artists a few years back by Herb magazine, I believe. And that was a significant honor. Herb is, I think it's Herb, and that was a very very secular magazine that didn't look kindly on Christian music by nature. But Braille achieved some recognition there, showing, again, that Christian rap is breaking out. It's not just getting attention in the pew among youth groups and that sort of thing. It's actually being respected more and more as a viable form of rap. As the 2000s go on, there's new energy that comes not from just the East and the West Coast, but from the South and the Midwest. So I believe Flame is from St. Louis. Trip Lee, Lecrae, Tadashi, the 116 Click, these figures are from the South and the Midwest in many cases. And so there's a new seat at the table for groups and artists from these regions. And they draw a tremendous response. Of course, Flame and Lecrae end up with Grammy nominations. They sell tens of thousands of records. So that's leading into our present day. Now, Reformed rap is a major part of the Christian music world. Again, when you are having Grammy-nominated artists who are selling out tours in venue after venue and being able to support themselves entirely from music and even do well from music, even as they are very much first and foremost doing ministry through music, that's very important. That's a major achievement. Other artists like Shy Lin, Timothy Brindle, Lamp Mode Recordings, and others also are contributing here. So what should we think about all this? I'm just going to give you a few quick thoughts, kind of synthesizing this material from a theological perspective, and then I'll throw it open to your questions or thoughts, comments. Number one, I'll give you seven different ideas. Number one, I see this as a work of God's sovereign will, this whole development that we've been talking about. I think it's a good gift of God that rap music has been used to express the gospel, has been used to declare the truth of God's holy, inerrant word. We have seen in recent generations that you don't just worship God with a piano or an organ or a guitar. No, you can actually worship God through poetry set to beats. And I think that's great. God has given us common grace. He's given us special grace, of course, in the gospel of his Son, crucified for our sins. But common grace is also real. It's real. And we should realize that. So we should see, I think that working off of this idea that all of this proceeds from God's sovereignty, we can see this as God's common grace, artistic gifts coming to flourishing both in society and then, of course, as Christian rappers declare the truths of special grace through the medium of common grace. Reformed rap, in many cases, is preaching the gospel boldly, and the Lord seems to be blessing that. The Lord delights to bless the preaching of the gospel, you know? It doesn't mean that everybody who preaches the gospel always has everything go right for them. Following Christ, of course, means taking up your cross, and it can very, very easily lead to suffering and pain in the name of Christ. In fact, all of us, as Tim Keller has said, will go through suffering. That is a natural part, both of life in a fallen world, but especially of our discipleship with Christ. Christ, of all men, suffered the most. Nonetheless, the Lord loves to bless those who are preaching the gospel boldly. We need to remember that, right? When we are preaching the gospel, declaring the truths of Scripture, the Lord is pleased with that. He honors that, and he gives us grace to do that. So for all these reasons, I see this as a work of God's goodness, his sovereign goodness. Number two, I'm thankful for the way that Reformed rap is increasing diversity among believers. Let's just face it. Evangelicals have for for many years, for centuries, struggled to own our equality and our unity in Jesus Christ. Because of the nature of our society, we find it much easier to associate with those who look like us, talk like us, and are from our same region, have the same ancestral heritage. It's not wrong to enjoy fellowship with those, friendship with those who are from your region or something like that. It's not a bad thing. That's another part of common grace. But it's not a good thing when ethnic or regional identity trumps the gospel and spiritual identity in Jesus. That's not a good thing. And of course, our history, our American history in this country, is filled with all kinds of prejudice, specifically, of course, African Americans being held as slaves. And that has created, that has directly resulted in a black church and a white church. And there can be strengths in those traditions, and we can honor those strengths. We don't have to go nuclear here. But we should also realize that our heritage is difficult and has created many problems, and that the gospel should and must unite us. That's tricky. It takes hard work, but it must unite us. It's got to. In order to demonstrate the world-defying power of Christ, it must. Well, Reformed Rap, I think, is helping along those lines. It's pushing us that direction, bit by bit. As people are seeing that these guys who rap, though they may not look like the people listening to the music, these guys, or they may, but these guys really are sold out for Christ. I mean, many of these guys are doing, you know, evangelistic sermons or theological lessons. I remember hearing a flame rap on hermeneutics, right? Flame raps on the Trinity, on the nature of the Trinitarian persons and their roles in the Trinity. I mean, this is beautiful stuff, right? You can't argue with that content. That if you're a believer and you love the Lord, you might not be familiar with that music. That's fine. Not everybody's going to like rap. You don't have to. But you can't argue with the heart behind the music when you actually give it a listen. So may it be, may this be true. I hope this is true. I think it's true. And may it ever be so. May rap be used, this common grace tool, to increase a love among God's people for fellow members of Christ's body. Third, rap is an incredibly powerful means of communication. You can do amazing storytelling and preaching through rap. Nas has a song from Illmatic about a bullet. He tells the story of one bullet that's loaded into a gun and how this bullet impacts lives throughout one city block. And it's incredibly powerful. It puts into perspective violence in a way that would be very difficult to do in other forms of music or art. There is a special way that the powerful, propulsive medium of rap communicates messages. Again, in a common grace way. I'm not speaking solely of Christian rap, just in terms of rap in general. So this is a reality we want to acknowledge. Rap, I don't think, is just, you know, this bad musical form that, yeah, you can kind of redeem it. No, I actually think rap is well suited to Christians, because you can tell a story, or you can share a message, you can develop a thought. You listen to a lot of folk music or pop choruses, you get like six lines, that is, to make your point. You know? You have so much stress placed on the hook in different forms of popular music that you can't tell that much of a story, or you have to do it very economically. Well, rap historically gives you 16 bars or even more, depending on your structure, your rhyme structure. That allows you to communicate messages in great depth and tell beautiful narratives and that sort of thing. Fourth, rap is a lot of fun. These aren't, you know, the world's most profound points necessarily, but they should be stated. It's fun. You don't have to be scared of it. Again, it's common grace, I think, a common grace gift of God. It's very challenging to come up with complex rhymes. It's very challenging to make a beat. Anyone can rhyme cat and hat. And too many of our hymns, by the way, have the same rhymes, you know? The same Amazing Grace, place, you know, I mean, I'm found, oh, how sweet the sound. I actually love the songs that I'm now disparaging. But with rap, one of the things that I really enjoy and that drew me to it is the lyricism, the intelligence. So people who don't have degrees, people who don't even care about going to school or something like that, can show some of the strongest intellect out there. You think of a figure like Eminem or Rakim. Both Eminem and Rakim are known for very complex, what's called multi-syllable rhymes. So you don't just rhyme one syllable, cat hat, you rhyme multiple syllables. Mathematics. Is that three syllables? Mathematics, right? Acrobatics. I've just rhymed three syllables. And what Eminem does, and others do, is to do that over and over again. What's the rhyme from 8 Mile? But he keeps on forgetting what he wrote down. The whole crowd goes so loud. You know, even there, he's just done three rhymes in one line, right? So in other words, you can't just look at rap and say, oh, they're just kind of, I don't know, spitting these crude words to a beat, and it's kind of tribal or something. I mean, there's a lot of intellect. You have to be a genius to be able to do what many of these rappers do, though they wouldn't necessarily claim that title. Of course, the Jizza for Mutang does. Genius. Fifth, I don't think that rap works great for most congregational worship. It's more of an art form that is for outside worship. So I, even though I do rap and love rap, I wouldn't necessarily say that in coming years we're going to have congregations doing rap songs in corporate worship. Maybe, possible, haven't ruled it out, but it's tough. You know, the blue-haired ladies in the back, are they going to be rapping the lyrics? I don't know. I don't know if they are. Some churches are doing it. Depending on a church's views on special music, that can happen. My personal views are that I don't do a lot of performances in church. If I'm a pastor, I wouldn't do a lot of that, of most any kind. I think the church should encourage music and art, and there are lots of ways to do that. But because of the more individual nature of rap, it's at least trickier to figure out how to incorporate it into congregational worship. But maybe someone will think more about that and how to do that well. We can talk about that in the comments here. Six, there continues to be meaningful discussion among Christian rappers about what exactly we do in our music. Do you preach the gospel? Is that what you're supposed to do? You're supposed to preach and teach? Or are you rapping about all of life? What exactly are you doing? And this is a good question for us to ask in every facet of our lives, hip-hop or otherwise. What does it mean that Jesus is Lord? His resurrection has vindicated him and enthroned him and exalted him over every power in the universe, and therefore he claims lordship over everything, including every part of your life and mine. What does that mean for you? What does that mean for you as a student? What does that mean for you as a worker? Part-time, full-time, amazing, impressive job, lowly job? What does it mean for the way you play sports? What does it mean for the way you do relationships? What does it mean for how you watch TV? These and a million other questions confront us as we think about, seriously, about the theological doctrine of the Lordship of Christ. And so we see this in rap. I mentioned these discussions among Christian rappers as to what exactly you're supposed to do. That's a good discussion for us to have. So rap can prompt that discussion, I think. It certainly has for me in my life. Seventh and finally, it does seem that rap is mainstreamed to some extent among Christians, and I see that as a very good thing. You know, so much of the Old Testament, and of course the Old Testament dwarfs the New Testament in terms of sheer size, is poetry. Poetry. Evangelicals have a tricky relationship with art and poetry. We can sometimes seem to be those who are so serious about the spiritual things that we don't really care about the more artistic things. The Bible knows no such dichotomy, though, does it? Poetry is one of the most profound expressions of sincere faith in God in the Bible. So there is, I would say, a direct reason for us to care first about poetry and complex poetry, of course, right? There are various psalms that are structured in very careful ways, all declaring God's truth the way the Spirit breathed it out. But there are poems that are carefully structured and crafted. There seems to me, then, to be a direct correlation between what you do in rap. Even though many Christians, at least in the last couple decades, have struggled with rap in the church. Isn't this, you know, originating from people who did not love the Lord and were angry and, you know, in gangster rap are advocating the killing of cops and terrible things and violence against women and rape and all those things are there. How do we deal with those things? Well, if we have this kind of understanding of poetry and then we have an understanding of Paul's discussion of food sacrifice to idols, I think we're set up pretty well. And we can say, though the origins of rap may not dovetail exactly with where you and I are today, we can enjoy this art form as a good gift of God. We can use this to glorify Him. Just like rock music doesn't have great spiritual origins, right? It certainly doesn't. Or if you're looking at, I don't know, certain folk traditions, Bob Dylan didn't set out to declare the greatness of God. He did that for a brief period, but he seems to have left that. But nonetheless, we don't look at folk artists and go, whoa, steer clear of folk music. There are some bad people in folk's history. You should steer clear of that. We want to be honest about the violence that we see, the problems that we see in different sectors of the musical world, sexual nature. But, I mean, we haven't stopped Christians from doing pop music, which on many radio stations is so incredibly sexualized you can scarcely believe it. So why would we not also try to bring the gospel to rap and communicate it through rap? I just don't see, how you can sanctify one and therefore love Third Day or even Keith Green and not then have at least a place for rap. My own background, I was 12 years old. I'm almost done here. I went to my buddy's house and in 1993 and watched the movie Menace to Society, which I do not commend to you. Ultra-violent, disturbing, powerful movie, well-made, similar to Boys in the Hood. And though I was a nerdy white kid with huge glasses in coastal Maine, something was lit in me. There was this way of being, this way of expression in this culture that connected with me. And that's true, I think, as we've talked about briefly with many of my peers by way of background. And so I have an unlikely part in this whole discussion. Why am I here? Well, I think that rap has a certain power, like many forms of music do, and I think that I can, in God's grace, try to communicate the gospel. That's what I started doing after I watched this film, started writing poetry, didn't transition into rap right away, which was a good thing. It would have been a little odd for me to produce gangster rap in that stage in seventh grade. But I got to college and did some slam poetry, Taylor Molly and Saul Williams and others. And I realized after I heard the Gospel Gangsters, that was the first Christian group I'd ever heard. I heard them on Soul Train. Don't know what this mic is doing, I'm sorry. I don't understand microphones. I heard them on Soul Train, and I was like, wow, here's this Christian group that, to their credit, is declaring the greatness of God, the power of God in His gospel. But they're doing it in a West Coast style with great skill. And so I started not just writing poems, but trying to rhyme, you know, the end of the line, and then Eminem becomes famous, and I sort of try to do the more complex multi-syllable thing. And so I've been rapping now for 10 years, 12 years or so. And so I would commend that story to you as one example of how Reformed rap, Christian rap, has influenced life. Songs to check out. You could check out Mars Ill, Two Steps. If you want to get a little bit of background on this, maybe you know these songs, but if you don't, you can go to YouTube and get these songs and listen to them, and you will understand Christian rap much better. Mars Ill, two steps, cross movement, House of Representatives. That's the original classic cross movement hit. So good. I listened to it in preparation for this talk, and I had to stop writing and preparing, just listen. Braille, I mentioned, Shades of Grey, the song and the album, amazing album. Grits, Ooh Ah, great song from Grits. The Ambassador, What Do You See? If you have read or encountered John Stott's Cross of Christ, which is probably the best book I know of on the Cross of Christ, I would strongly encourage you to get that book and work through it devotionally. This is kind of the rap form of the Cross of Christ. The Ambassador. Oh, John Stott. S-T-O-T-T. Deep Space 5, Christian Underground now, The Night We Called It a Day. Lecrae, Jesus Music. Guessing people here know that song, which sounds like Deep Space. Yep, sorry. The Night We Called It a Day. A little bit of a irony there. Lecrae, Jesus Music, which sounds like a ludicrous song, except it's all about Jesus. Love it. You could break your car windows in that one alone. Trip Lee, To Live is Christ. Great song about Philippians. Very powerful. Tunnel Rats, if you want to get some of that edgy LA, West Coast Christian stuff, the song Motivate. LA Symphony, another West Coast group. They're very fun. They're very different. They're very playful and clever. Their song L.A., L.A. Symphony, L.A. That's actually a very fun song, too. That's by L.A. Symphony. Tunnel Rats was Motivate. And then lastly, KJ52, Dear Slim. That's a song that that KJ52 wrote to Eminem to witness to him. And it's very powerful. And I heard that it actually got all the way to Eminem's manager. I don't know if Eminem ever... Yeah. Yeah. So very interesting. And the last rapper I need to mention to you is this one. Is that? Yes. And if you want to hear my album, I'm not assuming you do, but you can go here, crosswordsmusic.blogspot.com. I am, to my knowledge, the only Christian college or university professor that has cut a rap album. I recorded it in 2004 with a guy who worked in Outkast Studios. I flew to Atlanta and in one day recorded a 10-song, 11-song rap album. Or you can go to my blog, and it's there, too, if you don't want to take down that whole title. Owenstrand.com, and go to the About page, and my rap album is there. So you can see the proof that I don't just get up here and talk to you about the history of rap. I actually try to do it. Yes. Okay, that's it. That's what I got. What do you want to talk about? Yes. What was that? Yo, I got some flow. What do you know? I'll put on a show. That's all I got. No, I'd probably do something like, let me punish the stomach of this wonderful stunner. Let me preach and implant to seek to speak it to one of the tongue is fleet, the spirit's will, and while I'm killing this number, he brings the fall into life like we still in the summer. Speaking law like John Cotton, call a colony rap. You got to cut off your leg when you fall in the trap. This is a little bit of literal calling for that. In the spirit, I'm calling you. Be calling me back. Be calling out to the creator who has made it a matter, mass supporter, board this much like a fortress, store foreign borders, many levels like this force and borders. A preaching over savages and barns are a forest. For us in our salvation, the word came and tarried. No one daily kissed the ground while my blame was buried. All my pain was carried by a back stronger than a rock. Long as I can drop rhymes, I never wander from the spot. Never haunted by the past, I'm ghost at the top. My house is not haughty, I have no honor to shop. I travel in the style of a stranger. Bring in division where I must. God saves the remainder. That's it. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That there'll be an extra charge for that performance on the way out. Yes. Yeah. That's an interesting point. I know that, that sounds familiar. I can't substantiate it, but I know that Cross Movement does more than just putting out CDs, for example. They really seem to mentor their artists and train them. And I'm sure, I mean, the Cross Movement is less known today. I think they've just kind of gone their different ways. I mean, they put out music for a long time. It happens. But I mean, they were it, you know, 10 years ago when I was in college. They were kind of, you know, really leading the way in a more public way. So I still have immense respect for the Cross Movement. Yeah. Yeah, the Cross Movement, Shai Lin is kind of similar to that today. You know, his albums are like a theology class. I teach theology 1, 2, and 3, you know, systematic theology. Yeah. I mean, so that's part of the humor with people who object to rap in the church. Not speaking of congregational worship, but it's like, these guys are way more theological than most pastors are. You know, you listen to these songs, Flames Hermeneutics. It's like a hermeneutics class, you know. I can't either. Other thoughts, questions, comments? Yeah, I Mars Ill, who I mentioned, I would commend to you. They're not putting out as much music now as they did earlier either. You know, a lot of these guys have families now, kids. Coming up in the ranks. Bizzle. Okay, Bizzle has been commended. I don't know. I'm not as Andy Mineo, yeah, he's definitely an up and comer. I don't have my finger right on the pulse of Christian rap the way I was trying to 10 years ago, so I don't know as many of the. Well, Mars Ill would be one. I mean, Deep Space 5 and Mars Ill both put out albums that were very widely acclaimed by the rap community. So on secular rap sites, they were reviewed very positively. Braille's stuff should be better known. Some of these guys, though, in the Christian rap world have had some personal difficulties. So the Ambassador, Timothy Brindle, very talented rapper, very complicated rapper. Truth, Braille had a divorce. I don't think it, as I understand, it wasn't his fault. But there's some battles here. And that can contribute, unfortunately or understandably, depending on the case. But I would listen to Braille's music. Check that out. He's still making really good music. Grits, I don't think everybody nowadays knows about Grits. And that's a group that I would say, go back, get the old stuff. You know, we have this prejudice of the new today. If it wasn't made a month ago, it's ancient, you know, and you shouldn't listen to it. That's so stupid. No, go back to the 90s. Get Grammatical Revolution by Grits. That is an amazing album. I would strongly commend that. Yeah, yeah. Art of Translation is good. My favorite is Grammatical Revolution. That's my personal favorite. What else? Yeah. Yeah. That's very cool. Can you just tell me a little bit more about it? Like, what are your focuses? What programs do you have? What are you trying to do? That's a good question. I think it has been very difficult over the years, and I was mentioning that in relation to poetry in the Bible, because I think a lot of Christians looked at the origins of rap, and honestly, understandably, looked at a lot of the popular rap that was being produced. You know, for example, a song like Cop Killer was socially divisive, you know? And whatever you think of a person's right to express themselves, that's not a positive message, right? Violence against women in rap, secular rap, is a terrible thing, you know? So these sorts of things have contributed, I think, to the popular conception in the church about rap. That's understandable in a way. But what needs to happen from there is that people need to recognize, number one, that there's no art form that's perfectly pure that Christians do. And even if a Christian started an art form, that doesn't mean an unbeliever can't corrupt it. So there's this problem we have in the church, I think, with origins and art. If it was started by a non-Christian, it must be bad. Well, that's problematic. If pottery was started by a non-Christian, you know, would you not do pottery? I don't know. You can play that out logically. And then there's also this need that we've been talking about to just say, look, listen to these people. Listen to what they say. Listen to their material. And we have to do that in a gracious and a patient way, you know. I think if you do that in a gracious and a patient way and you show people the product, yes, it's different maybe from what a lot of people are used to, but change is good. Diversity is good. God has given us diversity. Diversity is a beautiful thing. It's not a curse. In heaven, we're going to come from every tribe and tongue, right? And give God glory and praise. And so if rap can be a part of, you know, increasing our awareness of that, and maybe we'll be rapping in heaven to some degree. I don't know. I don't know what the liturgy is going to be like. But those are some things I would say. Well, thank you again for coming. It's been great having you guys here at this conference. Just really fun for me. And I hope it was a good conference for you. 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 A good conference for you.